This show was first broadcast on Free FM 89.0, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access radio station. For more information on our station and our wide range of programs, visit freefm.org.nz. Podcasting. It's easier than you think, and Free FM has everything you need, from help with initial planning right through to hosting and delivery across popular podcast platforms. Our content creators are just ordinary people delivering engaging weekly podcasts and radio shows on all sorts of issues that affect them, their communities, and our society. We're really keen to support new content by, for, and about a wide range of community groups and issues. Interested? Go to freefm.org.nz or see our Facebook page to find out more. You're listening to Free FM 89.0, and this is Free Choice 2019, a forum for candidates to explain their aims and platforms going into this year's local government elections. Free FM acknowledges Coffee Culture Te Rapa and Nancy Cager for supporting our political content this year, including Free Choice and our Election Day coverage. Now here's your host, Kelly Pike.
Kia ora and welcome into the studio, Rob Pascoe for Hamilton East.
Hi Kelly, good to be back.
So, tell us about yourself and what you offer that others don't.
Okay, well, I'm a third-generation Hamiltonian, born here, lived here all my life, apart from a three-year stint at Auckland University. I've raised a family here of now three adult daughters and my wife, who's been a secondary school teacher here in Hamilton. Two of my three daughters live in Hamilton, and five of my grandchildren all attend the same school in Hamilton. So I really feel I've got some skin in the game here in Hamilton. And I've seen it grow from, you know, what was a cow town into a really exciting and thriving city. And I think there's just oodles of potential waiting out there for us, if we manage it right, to really grow it into a really great and livable town.
So what is it that you offer that other candidates don't?
I've got had a background in accounting, business and finance. And now that I've retired from the various accounting practices that I was a partner in for something like about 42 years, I'm sort of in that mode where I feel I've got opportunities to provide a community service, and I think I can help provide service in those areas where I have got training and skill. I think when I came to the council back in 2013, we were still struggling with our finances, and I think we've made some quite significant inroads. I say we, not me, but we've made some really significant inroads over the last 6 years.
I do want to talk about that in a little bit more detail soon, but I've wondered first, I mean, you tend to go under the radar a little bit, not particularly controversial, maybe a little bit more quieter, but in what ways do you contribute outside of attending the meetings?
I work pretty much in the background around, particularly around the finance and accounting area. I thought I had made some noises, in particularly around, the rate increase and some of the options that we had when we did the long-term plan around fuel taxes and so forth. I think I stick to my knitting a bit. I probably am not a born and bred politician, but I know how to roll up my sleeves and get some of the work done that needs to be done in council. And I'm not afraid to debate on issues that I feel quite strongly about. And some of those are not related to my training around accounting and finance.
Yeah, just for now, we will talk about the finance side. I think it's on most people's mind, the fact that we did have such a high increase in rates in this term. How did you feel about that, and what was your perspective on it? Was it necessary?
It was necessary in order to make sure that we looked after our assets. We had some quite significant assets like Waterworld that we hadn't looked after, the Founders Theatre that we hadn't looked after particularly well. And this is not just in the immediate past two or three terms, but going back over a long period of time. And I worked on the rate increase being to actually fund the maintenance of those assets which had fallen behind. We are still to deliver on that. You know, I mean, the momentum starting within council to fix up our footpaths and spend that money that's necessary to ensure that our assets do stay in good working order. We haven't quite got there yet. I guess my concern subsequent to the rate increase is that the majority of councillors have gone off in a different direction and are spending money in unplanned areas. And that is of concern to me. And some of those ideas around a central city park, de-sexing of cats, you know, there's a whole raft of them. Some of them are quite small expenditure, but cumulatively they start to add up. And when they haven't been planned, they do surprise not only other councillors but also the community. So I think we need to make sure that we start to plan a lot better and we don't have these surprise projects that pop up out of nowhere and need some urgent, take some urgent priority around using up our rates and our loan funding.
So how do projects like that get through without being well planned?
Well, I guess sometimes it will be a group within council. In this case, if you take the city park, for example, that's a mayor's dream. And he's managed to get some councillors to support, but not the majority of councillors support around purchasing land in the city to develop that into a park. And that is sort of going off on a wee bit of a tangent. We haven't been out to the community to ask the community if that's what they want, and if they do want it, what it's actually going to cost, so that at least everybody's up to speed and knowing that, you know, this park might cost $100 million. And they're happy. They want the park in the city and they're happy to pay for it in their rates.
So in the 10-year plan, they said $7 million.
Yep.
And you just said $100 million.
Yep. Well, they haven't got a plan for what the total park is going to be. The $7 million was to buy three properties. And they bought three properties at $6.4 million, 50% over and above what their market value was at the time of purchase. But we've only bought three very small buildings and there's still a way to go. And there's still some significant property and land. And when I've raised $100 million as being the potential cost of the land in those buildings, no one's really batted an eyelid that I'm way out of the ballpark in terms of what it might cost.
What I expect that they would know that you know numbers.
Well, I would hope so, and they would challenge me if I got it wrong,
yeah,
for sure. And if I was a long way out, but no staff nor any of the other elected members have suggested that I'm way off with my potential estimate of what of what the land might cost.
Now, I was reading through your Facebook page this morning.
Yeah.
That sounds okay.
Good. That's what it's there for.
Yeah. But you did sort of mention some of the plans, I think, we sort of associated with the last mayor and that council. So is it that you were more on board with the vision? You know, those coffee table books that we all sort of refer to.
Yes, those neighbourhood plans.
Yeah.
Neighbourhood plan. Well, I think we have talked about those during this term and have said that whilst they were labelled by some councillors in the last term as being coffee table, dust gatherer books, there are times when we've referred back to them in this term and said, hey, it would be useful to get the book off the coffee table, dust it and have a look and see whether there's things in there that, that might work. And so I've certainly noticed one of the first things this council did was ditch the youth and elder persons councils. For whatever reason, I wasn't sure. I voted against it at the time. And, you know, in the last few weeks at some of the meetings, there's been talk about why did we ditch those. They would be useful now. And I think one of the things we haven't done quite so well in this term, and I know we've tried hard to do it, is consult with our community. That we've, you know, we changed the DC policy. We went out and consulted with the developers. And that's great. But we didn't go and consult with other parts of the community. And whatever the developers don't pay in DCs, the rest of the city pays in rates. So, you know, we kind of have lost that. And I thought the Elder Persons Council and the Youth Council of the last the last term and earlier, provided that funnel of people who would come through and present a sensible voice. They would in turn consult with their communities too, and bring perhaps a much more united force to council in terms of the submissions that we got, or that we get on various projects that we undertake. So I'm not saying that they are the be all and end all, but I think that they may well ensure that we don't leave significant groups out when we come to do our consultation.
Mm. So if you were to work towards three priorities, what would you say that they would be?
Well, the first one is to keep our books balanced and control debt. We're going into, in this long-term plan, our debt, which has sat around about $350 million for the last 6 years, is going to go up to about $750 million over the next 10 years. And look, I'm not saying that that's bad and we shouldn't do it.
Sounds bad.
Because we've got some major infrastructure spend, but we need to manage it well. And we need to be nimble enough that if the market changes out there, we can pull back and not borrow the money before we actually have to.
What does managing it well mean?
Well, managing it means being nimble to what changes occur in our economy. And we're already seeing a slowdown in the whole of the national and international economy. So, you know, that means that the developers will slow down bringing sections onto the market. So why should we have the infrastructure all sitting there and ready if a developer says, well, I was aiming to sell 100 sections a share out at, let's say, Peacock, but the way the market is at the moment, I'm only going to sell 50. And we've put all this infrastructure out there on the basis of selling 100 when we could have delayed that capital spend until the developer was ready to. And that's an example. It doesn't work quite so neat that way, but that's the sort of thing that we need to do rather than... And being nimble means we can respond faster to those challenges.
So have we already saddled ourselves with debt or put ourselves at a lot of risk over Peacock?
Peacock's got its risk, but the risk is somewhat lower because we got money from the Housing Infrastructure Fund, which is interest-free, and that came from the government.
But that was for the bridge or the...
Oh, no, that is for the roading and also pipes and all the other things. So it is a Housing Infrastructure Fund. So we can spend that on all of... It's $185 million. It's going to cost us $260 million, so we have to borrow the extra and pay interest on that. But essentially, we get on that $260 million spend, we get $188 of it interest-free for up to 10 years.
But we could have a bridge to nowhere?
We could do, but I don't think that will happen. I think there is a shortage of residential land in Hamilton. It's really a question of working closely with the developers to make sure that they roll out those sections for sale as we provide the infrastructure.
And do you think we're managing those relationships well, so that we are working well with developers?
I believe we are at the moment, but the developers are profit driven, and when they say, well, you know, we're not going to make any money out of those extra 50 sections if we put 100 on the market, then they will reduce their market to keep the supply down and the prices up as high as they possibly can. And we've seen bits of that happen in Rototuna. I think go back 3 years ago, we had 3,700 developer-ready sections out there. Around the city, but the developers were telling us they had no sections for sale.
Could we be doing more to encourage that supply?
I think where we might be able to do more, and I believe we're doing a lot more than we have in the past, is working more closely with those developers and saying to the developers, look, if you want to open up those sections now, you put the infrastructure in and we'll pay you back after you've put it in and you've sold the sections. So, and we're doing a bit of that too. So we're doing a little bit of having much closer relationships than as we did in Rototuna. We put the infrastructure in 20 years ago and we're only just getting some of the... I mean, we've had development contributions back, but we're still getting it back for that spend 20 years ago, when in that time the ratepayers have had to fund the repayments and the loan interest on that over that particular period of time.
Okay. So apart from the finance side of things, what other priorities would you say?
Oh, look, I've got, we're a city of young people. I think we went off skew a little bit around the destination playgrounds over the past 3 years. We've brought that back in, and we've got we've had one new destination playground in Hillcrest, and and the one in Harepuke, which was already on the plan at the beginning of this triennium, and we've got another one planned for Melville. So I would like to see perhaps a new council get a bit little more proactive around the destination and the neighbourhood playgrounds and bring those up to speed, because you only have to drive, I live out Harepuke Way, and you only have to drive past there and you see cars parked up and lots of kids and mums and dads socialising with their chilli bins and everything else. You know, so they are, you know, for $1 million spent on each destination playground, the value is there in terms of the community benefits that they bring back. So that's one of the areas that I'm particularly keen about. And the gardens too. The Hamilton Gardens are a jewel in our crown. It's a unique proposition that Hamilton has, and we should be continuing to develop that to keep the jewel in the crown and have it as a destination not only for Hamiltonians but for outside visitors.
So, we're ready for our yes-no questions.
Yes, okay.
Okay, Rob, would you vote for single transferable voting?
Yes, I would. The only is it yes or no, yes or no comment?
Nope.
Okay, all right.
So, yes for STV?
Yes.
Would you vote to keep Māngai Māori seats?
Yes.
Would you vote for a living wage for staff and contractors at all opportunities?
No, not with council money.
Are developers paying enough in contributions?
Yes.
Should Hamilton City Council have declared a climate emergency?
No.
Should we be changing the names of Bryce Fontempsky and Grey Streets?
No.
Rob Pascoe for Hamilton East, thanks for joining us on Free Choice 2019.
Thanks, Kelly. Good to be here.
For more episodes of this Community Access Radio show, please visit freefm.org.nz. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this podcast possible by funding the Access Internet Radio Project.